We're going to talk about the Batman for this cold open, even though you've all probably seen it potentially months ago, depending on when we decide to drop this episode.
Right. And if you haven't, I feel like most of the stuff we might talk about might have been spoiled already.
Yeah, true.
By this point.
And if you haven't, are you really interested in seeing it? That's the question.
Right. Yeah. That's another thing. It's like
his parents died.
Ah,
spoilers.
Damn it,
his parents, they're dead.
Oh man. Tariq, what'd you think? I saw it a few days ago. You literally just walked out of it and came to podcast.
Right. I just walked out of the theater. I thought it was dope. I ate like Five Guys right before I went.
Oh, big mistake.
Yeah, so I was mad tired. And like, for like the first 30 minutes, I was just like on and off sleep. And I was like, fuck, I gotta go home. Right when I was texting my girlfriend, like, yeah, I'm about to dip. Like, that's when I woke up and I was like, okay. And from the point when I was completely up to the end, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I was invested. I thought that shit was dope. Only thing, and granted, I know because it's a Batman movie, so it just makes sense that it's very, very dark. But who the fuck color graded that shit? I couldn't see nobody's eyes. Like, I was like, shit, I was in a theater like this. Out there, it might be my theater. I don't know.
Yeah, it might be your theater's projector. It looked really good to me. I really liked how it looked.
I felt like it might have been it because we went to kind of like, we didn't go to the one we usually go to. So, like, I just, when we were walking through it, I was like, this theater's kind of shitty.
This is a general PSA to movie theaters. Keep your projectors in tip-top shape, please.
Yeah.
It ruins movie-going experiences.
Did I ever tell you about how I saw Endgame and how the theater had a sound issue that was never fixed? So the movie was like drastically low. Like the audio was like very low. And we just had to watch the whole movie like that. So
that sounds awful.
I didn't know that Captain America said Avengers Assemble until like a week later. Like, because I found out on like Twitter. Like, I saw it the day it came out. But I found out on Twitter that he said Avengers Assemble. And like, everybody was just kind of cheering. We couldn't fucking hear anything.
That's so funny.
Yeah. It's rough.
I gotta say, I do like that moment as a like isolated moment. Like, it's a nice moment to have in your build up in the MCU. But also, like, I don't know, I don't think it's like I only think that because it's like this iconic line that we all know. I don't really think it makes sense in the context of the scene because everyone's already there. Everyone has assembled.
They have assembled. Yeah, that's true.
It's like, I get it, and it's cool, especially like catching Thor's hammer and then saying it. It's cool, but I'm also like, is it as cool as you think it is, Cap? Is it that cool? I feel the same way about Tony being like, and I am Iron Man. I get it. It's mirroring the first Iron Man movie. I think it's a little dorky. I think it's equally as dorky as Thanos. I also think Thanos saying I am inevitable is dorky. I don't know. Maybe I just think all their catchphrases are dorky.
This is comic book shit.
Yeah.
If I read
exactly.
that on a page, I'd be like, whoa. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm Vengeance, on the other hand.
that shit got, I ain't gonna lie. Because when he first said it, I felt this. I was like, that's kind of nerdy. Why the fuck you say that? And then when it came back at the end, I was like, he's like the Family Guy thing. I was like, he said it.
I think it works pretty well like that because
I do.
Like, I feel like his arc is about, like, this is kind of a movie about, like, this is definitely a reclusive virgin Bruce Wayne. Like, he doesn't go out or have any social skills. Yeah,
he feels like he's like 19. Like,
he's definitely a kid. Like, he's definitely a kid. He definitely doesn't have any social skills. And one of the things I love about the movie is that he's fucking Batman 90% of the time. He is, he's Bruce Wayne almost never. He's always just in full outfit, and that rules. I fucking love that. And I feel like the whole thing about this being so early in his career, this is year two, it's like It's about how Batman is really doing this for self-serving purposes. Like, he's sort of this, he starts off saying, I am vengeance. And it's like, literally, his motivation is to get revenge on the city that, like, took so much from him, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it's not really to, he's like, it's to clean up the streets, but it's really about vengeance. I am vengeance, is what he says. And then throughout the movie, you've got this other character who sees this Riddler character who sees himself in Batman and like attaches to him and starts to do shit because he sees himself. And all of a sudden he inspires this like incel uprising of these like incels who are like terrorists who believe that they are getting revenge mm-hmm. on the people who are owed revenge, unlike Batman. Right, exactly. that's exactly what, like, their motivation is comparable to Bruce's motivation in this mm-hmm. movie. And so that moment when that one dude is just like, I am vengeance, and Batman's like, holy fuck, like, am I one of them? You know what I mean? Right, and that's the moment where he shifts and he's like, this is not about vengeance anymore. This is about saving this city. And that's when he goes and
hope.
Exactly. And that's mm-hmm. when he goes and saves the people. And he literally just like, I love that at the end of the movie, Batman in full costume is just going in and saving people. Like, he's just going in and rescuing people covered in dirt. And he's just like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's great. I just thought I think it's the best arc they've given Bruce Wayne in any Batman movie. Granted, I'm about to rewatch all of them, so we'll see. But I don't know. It was just a cool take. It's just all a cool take.
I thought it was dope. I love Buddy who played Gordon.
Dude, Jeffrey Wright
He stole the movie from me.
Mikey texted me. I think he said that Jeffrey Wright is incapable of giving a bad performance. I think that's what she said, Mikey. And it's true. Like, he is so good as Gordon. Like, literally so good as Gordon. But also, I just love that, like, so much of the movie is like them being detective partners.
I thought that shit was dope. That shit was really dope. I loved all of that.
Ugh, it's rad, man. It's good.
I loved Penguin when he's just like, you fucking idiots. It don't you sound like a idiots. Bat. You fucking.
I love Colin Farrell. I can't believe that's Colin Farrell, but his performance is so good. Everyone's performance in this movie is so good. Zoe Kravitz is so good. Andy Serkis as fucking Alfred is so good.
Yeah, man, he's the fucking best.
I'm glad Andy Serkis is getting more live action work because he's a really good actor and he's known for being the mocap guy. He's known for like that's what he is. And but I like that Matt Reeves worked with him in Planet of the Apes because he plays Caesar in the Planet of the Apes movies. And so Matt Reeves worked with him before on those two movies. And I love that he was just like, oh, yeah, this guy is not just good at this. He's a really fucking great actor. So he's my perfect Alfred. I'm going to cast him as Alfred. Yeah, man. Good shit. I'm going to go see it again. I think I'm going to go see it again soon. It's a little long. It's a long movie, but.
Yeah, but I was. There wasn't a point where like I felt like I'm like all right, you know what I mean? Like I think you
may have benefited from being so tired in the first 30 minutes because the whole thing flew by for me until the last 30. In the last 30, I was like, oh, this is still good, but like I'm tired. It was how I felt. So maybe that like your little you got a little rest in the first 30 and you were ready to go for the rest of the thing.
Man, that was so weird. I just got so tired out of nowhere. Yeah. And I was like, fuck.
Dude, I love Paul Dano's performance as Riddler too. So good.
Yeah.
He's such a little creep. What'd you think about the little Joker thing?
Oh, I made a joke when it happened because my
you're taking after the Joker.
because my roommate was like, he's like, that's not Joaquin, and
thank God.
And I said, I said, no, that's Andrew Garfield. And he was like, really? And I was like, no, but it kind of looked like Andrew.
It's this guy named, I can't pronounce his name, Barry Kagan? I don't know. He was in, did you see Eternals?
Mm-mm. Oh, he's I know what that, that, yeah, I haven't seen it though.
He's, you would notice, you would recognize his face if you saw it. He's, I think he's, I actually, he was one of the actors that I really liked in Eternals. I didn't really like that movie. But he, and I remember watching the trailer and being like, oh, that guy, I don't like his face. I'm not, I don't think I'm going to like that guy. And then watching the movie and being like, oh, I really like that guy.
I don't really like his face.
He does have like, I don't know, something about
is
his
like
face. One of,
is it like a punchable face? Like,
yeah, a little like, bit. Here,
like Beans from Even Stevens?
Yeah, a little bit. Let me send you this link on Discord real quick. And you'll... this is literally just a Google search, but since I can't even say his name properly, but he does have a good Joker face, and Matt Reeves basically said he's not he wasn't intending on it being like a setup for the next movie, more so just establishing the world and like establishing that, oh yeah, Joker's around, and like, because like that is actually, I think, a really good point. I didn't necessarily need this Joker cameo, but the one thing that has always kind of rubbed me the wrong way about Joker being portrayed in the movies is he's always a one-off. He's always a one-off in the movies, but in the comics he's this big important overarching villain who's always fucking shit up. It feels like they maybe were going to do that with Heath Ledger's Joker, and then unfortunately Heath Ledger died, which is fucking crazy. He died before that movie came out. I kind of like it from the perspective of like, oh yeah, we're just establishing that Joker exists and he's already like making his little moves, and eventually we'll bring him in and it'll feel like he's been a part of this all along. And I like that, especially like knowing he's not being set up as the guy in the next movie, because A, that's exactly what they did with Batman Begins. They literally tease him at the end and then he was the next one. And B, we've gotten too many Jokers. It's impossible to be excited about a new Joker right now.
Right. Yeah.
It's not possible. We got Jared Leto, then Joaquin Phoenix, then Jared Leto again in his redemption scene in Zack Snyder Justice League, which is worse than his performance in Suicide Squad, which is saying a lot. Granted, Zack Snyder Justice League is a better movie than Suicide Squad, but man, like,
it's been a while since I've seen both.
Oh, dude, they're
I saw them both in theaters too. Shit.
Well, no, you didn't see Zack Snyder Justice League in theaters because it's never been in theaters. Did you watch Zack Snyder's Justice League? His version.
Oh, that. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I'm thinking about when you said Justice League. I'm just thinking about the one that actually came.
The
in
one
theaters.
In theaters. Yeah. The Zack Snyder version is undoubtedly an improvement. Granted, it's 4 hours long, so be prepared for that. But it is not like a great movie, but it is absolutely an improvement. And I also like vastly prefer it visually. It's a pretty good looking movie. Granted, Zack Snyder's got his undersaturated shtick, and I like can get a little tired of it. But like, there's no doubt that that movie looks better than the other one. Look, there's some really nice looking stuff in it. There's some sequences that they took out of the original that are way cooler than what they put in the original. But it's, I don't know. I'm not a Zack Snyder guy, so I'm not gonna go to bat for it, but it's worth watch if like that should interest you. But he also like gave Jared Leto his little like redemption. I think he felt a camaraderie with Jared Leto, who feels like his performance was left on the cutting room floor in Suicide Squad, and Zack Snyder had a similar situation with that movie with Justice League. So he's like, oh, I'm going to give you a second shot in my movie too. And it was just pure proof that Jared Leto never should have been Joker. In my opinion.
Oh.
Morbius, though. We're all stoked for Morbius. Haven't met anyone who isn't stoked for Morbius. All right, well, I like Batman. I thought it was good. Thought it was a good movie.
Yeah. I did too.
I'm gonna be on a little Batman kick for a minute now. I think I'm gonna watch the animated series. You ever watch the animated series, Tariq?
Yeah, not all of it, but because that was when like
good fucking show.
I watched a little of it back when I was like, I was always an animation fan, like growing up as a kid. But that's when I was like, no, I gotta watch all the important shit. What's the best cartoons ever? And then every list I looked at was talking about the Batman cartoon.
That's always on there.
So I watched a couple of those, and
it is really well animated. I love how it looks. It's really great.
It's fucking, it's pretty. A lot of those are, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of those are Animaniac Studios.
I think that's right. Yeah,
and yeah, it looks fucking good. It really does. And stylized to hell.
Yeah, and it ended up inspiring so much stuff in the grand scheme of Batman.
That's where Harley Quinn comes from.
Harley Quinn was invented in that show.
Yeah, man,
and she is now arguably like a top three Batman villain in popularity. Probably, I would say. Like, I don't think anyone passes Joker, but like, I don't know, maybe there's one above her, but like, it's hard to, like, I don't know. People love Harley Quinn. She might be number two. She might be number two.
Yeah, I'm about to say who.
I would say either Riddler or.
But that's longtime fans though, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I mean?
You know, like, yeah, it does feel like Harley's kind of the number two. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And she's a great character. I hope they aren't afraid to use her in the Reeves verse just because Margot Robbie is doing this other version in these other movies, like in the Matt Reeves Batman movies. I hope they're not like afraid to have paralleling. Granted, there's going to be a Flash movie coming out this year with two more Batman in it. So like, I don't think they're afraid of doing multiple versions of the same character, but I hope Reeves isn't like, oh, they've already got this other Harley Quinn. We can't do our own Harley Quinn. Cause I think seeing Harley Quinn at Arkham, like being a psychiatrist at Arkham and watching her origin could be really interesting.
Does your theater have that little preview thing with all the DC movies in it? And it showed a little bit of Black Adam.
Yes, it did.
That shit looked kind of corny. I ain't gonna lie. The Rock looked crazy. The Rock looked crazy.
I still haven't even watched Shazam, and this is like kind of a Shazam like thing. It's like Black Adam's Shazam's villain, and so I also thought it looked pretty corny.
Rock looked crazy. I was like, man, they gotta turn this shit off.
I wish they granted I don't really care that much these days, but like I really wanted the MCU to cast him as Namor. Do you know Namor? He's like he's like the underwater guy. He's like the Atlantean. He's like their Aquaman, but like Rock looks like that guy.
Okay. He doesn't like any illustration of Black Adam I've ever seen.
He doesn't.
It's kind of like it's kind of like in your Spider-Man video, a sick ass blade they drew.
Dude, that's
sick ass light skin blade. Yeah.
It was so funny because I was watching it on my iPad and that was his first scene. And granted, it like, I think the coloring was a little weird in that scene because he's even lighter in that scene than he is in the rest, but he's still way too light. And then I paused because I was just like, is this Blade? Is he white? And then I went to Google and I searched why. And I think I searched why is Blade white in Spider-Man, and it auto-filled. Like, people had already been searching that.
Because like, what the fuck happened? Come on, man.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts. Like I was like, that does not look like any Blade I have ever seen anywhere.
Yeah, no.
And it's a cartoon. You can draw it like the comic.
That's my fucking issue. When you sent me that shit, like my eyes bulged out of my head. Like I was.
It's not like they just like cast a lighter skinned person or something. You know what I mean? Who's just a human?
Draw it.
Like they drew it.
Just color them right. Whatever.
It's nuts. It's nuts, man. And they give him a lightsaber.
Give him a full-on
lightsaber.
That was out of their control, though, I guess.
Yeah. All right, this is a really long cold open, but I hope you guys liked our Batman talk. Yeah. We're going to go talk about Family Guy now. Let's cue the theme.
Yeah!
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs a mob. The show inspires the same guy, except he totally say f***. End of verse.
Let's watch cartoons that burn.
Yeah, that's bananas.
As rough.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse, the podcast about cartoons that say swear words, aka adult animated comedies in general. We might cover things that aren't comedies eventually, the more of them that come out. But that's what we do now. Today, I'm here with my co-host, as always, Toonrific Tariq. Tariq, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm great now to not know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you go through your little encyclopedia in your brain, be like, okay, Family Guy.
So much of this is just gonna be me saying, this is how this is different from what they do later, and they bring this back.
Because I actually wrote in notes like questions about stuff. I was like, did they ever follow this up? Did they ever follow this up?
Because
I've only seen so like also I'm Johnny. Hello. I've seen probably the first 5 or 6 seasons of Family Guy, and I haven't been a regular Family Guy watcher in like over 10 years. So this is real interesting revisit. I honestly like a really enjoyable revisit for this first season for me.
It's so fucking fun. Like, it's been a while since I watched these. I'm not going to lie. It has been a while since I watched these. Whenever I just throw Family Guy on, I kind of go to the middle or the end. Sometimes I go like a little earlier, but I rarely ever go to these 7. I was like,
dude, they're
belting
good.
Out laughing. Like, I was like, it was so fucking funny.
But not only are they good, but they're sweet. Like, they really bring it back to the family. He is truly a family guy in this first season. And I really appreciated how they wrote and structured this first 7. I like, you know, there's some stuff that doesn't hold up, but there is so much that I found myself just like being so not just laughing, not just like entertained by, but like charmed and like there's a few times I was like, ah, which is so rare for me, Family Guy.
I think the very last moment in the last episode of the season. And so I just kind of like did like one of those like warm smiles. Like, that's fucking nice. Like when Brian licks Peter.
Yes.
I was like, that's fucking love
that.
Nice.
I love that shit. Granted, I think you can like kind of see the seeds of like modern Peter in there a little bit.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah. You want that. And a lot of my notes are about that. Because like one thing I noticed is everybody's like, Peter used to be this fucking caring dad. And he turned into, and it's like, nah, man.
Yeah, like they were definitely working through that in these first 7 because there seems like almost episode to episode 1, he's like a fool who's trying his best, and others he's like a real asshole.
In the second episode, he crashes the car into like the fucking TV thing, and he blames his daughter, and he just lets his daughter take the heat. It is made very clear in cutaways that he wanted a son first.
Yeah, that's true.
In this season, like, this,
can you
like,
check
this,
again?
Yeah, can you check again? there's another cutaway about Meg that I wrote down in here too. But nevertheless, like, there are still seeds for, like, at least for Peter. At least for Peter, and I'll say Meg too, but for everybody else, like, I think the seeds for who they end up becoming starts in season 2. Like, Chris is unrecognizable. Lois is like
way
wondering.
Too
mellow.
Yeah, he even sounds so different. Chris, like, yeah. And even like, and obviously like Meg has a totally different voice actress in these first 7. Granted, I think she's actually good. She's a good voice actress, but it's wild that they just were like, what is she left for some, she had something else she was working on. Right. I feel really bad
remember.
For her. I feel really
did you,
bad for her.
Did you ever, okay. So there's 2 Meg things I want to say. Did you ever see, there's this episode they do, fuck man. I don't remember what season it is, but they do it in like the middle of the run. It's an episode where they go back in time to the pilot. It's called Back to the Pilot. They go back in time to the very first episode, and it's animated like early Family Guy. But it's like,
wait, really? They do a flashback and animate it like early Family Guy?
So they take present day Brian and Stewie, the way they're animated, and stick them in the old animation style. And it's in 4:3. This is when the show was in widescreen and they produced this episode in 4:3.
I love that shit.
It's so cool. It's really fucking cool. And one thing they say. When Meg speaks, Stewie says, "Hey, what's wrong with Meg? She sounds like someone who missed a really great opportunity."
Oh no! Also, granted, I'm looking through now, and the actress who played her in the first season has like a long, great career. In fact, did you know she is Eliza Thornberry in the Wild Thornberry?
I think I did know that actually.
And then I just watched through the Spectacular Spider-Man. She plays Gwen Stacy on that. She's really good. She's a well working actress. She works a lot. Granted, you know, she missed out on one of the most stable jobs that exists in Hollywood.
Right. And especially like now and what the show became, like Mila Kunis kind of don't got to do much. Like every once in a while, there'll be a Meg episode. I think there's like one or two a season. But like, for most of it, she just kind of come in and say like two bars, and then she dip.
So wait, when they send them back, do they animate new stuff in the old style?
Yes.
Did they bring her? Did they bring the actress back?
No. No, like they don't. They don't like. They just use the dialogue she says in the in the episode. It's more about. It's more about Brian and Stewie, so there's a lot of like Stewie and Stewie interaction.
Is it like the Lion King 1.5 where you see for like an old episode from a new perspective?
Yeah, kind of. Man, I kind of want to show you that after this because it's so fucking.
I kind of want to watch it. It's actually really funny. you told me that, and I wanted to watch it.
It's really fucking funny. The second thing about Meg. That I wanted to say is that did you notice she was supposed to be voiced by Cree Summer at first?
I did not know that.
Yeah, she was casted and everything. Like it was supposed to be Cree Summer. Really? And yeah. And it's been a while since I heard that interview where she talks about it. So like I don't want to like mess the details up about like why she wasn't there. But yeah, 1000% was supposed to be Cree Summer until it wasn't.
That's wild.
It would have been pretty different, honestly.
she is credited in both 2011 and 2018 as Meg's voice, but I think they might just credit her when they use old recordings. Mm-hmm. But she got. Oh, and then also there's an uncredited there's an uncredited thing here. So there's a chance that she was not credited. So wait, is she in season 2 as well?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
I have no idea, actually.
But she's actually like a pretty well-known actress. She's the Have you ever seen Mean Girls?
Yeah, I finally saw Mean Girls.
Mean Girls rules. Great movie.
It does rule.
She plays Gretchen Wieners. She keeps trying to make fetch happen. so yeah, you know, that is wild though. Like cut that out.
Family Guy. It's perfectly, no, it's perfect for Family Guy. Leave it in.
It's funny to me that she, like, sorry, what was I gonna say? I just lost my train of thought. It's crazy that can happen where you like you have a job for a season, something happens, you miss out on it for the rest of the show, or you leave to go pursue a different, better opportunity, and then that shows up for 20 years after that.
Rough.
That's gotta suck
Rough.
A lot.
Yeah.
But she's good. Like she's good as Meg in season 1. I like her performance. You know, it's hard. It's different when you get used to Mila Kunis.
Right.
But yeah, it's funny. So. I guess we should do some setup about the show.
Okay,
like I guess so Seth MacFarlane from my Wikipedia research, Seth MacFarlane conceived of the show in 1995 while he was at college. He did an animated short called Life of Larry as his college thesis, and then was actually paid to do a sequel to that in 1996 called Larry and Steve, and like allegedly
Cartoon Network.
Yes. And allegedly that stuff kind of, that kind of morphed into Family Guy. Like, there's some of the dynamics from that kind of, right? Am I haven't watched those. Is it like, because it's like a guy and his dog talking, right?
It is. It's just Peter and Brian. Like,
okay.
At least the Cartoon Network one is. The Cartoon Network one is 1,000% just Peter and Brian. And down to the voices and the characterization is exactly the same. The one before, the college thesis, actually has the entire family. And
oh, wow.
A great portion of the jokes in the first episode are in that. So, like, that thing when when Peter, when they go to see Big, and Tom Hanks is like, "I have AIDS," and he's like, like, that's in there. Like, a lot of that.
That makes sense because referencing Philadelphia in 95.
Okay, yeah.
Makes a lot more sense. Yeah, because that movie came out in 93. Makes a lot more sense than referencing it in the year 2000 or 99. So after he did the comedy, the one on Cartoon Network, Fox executives contacted him to develop Family Guy. And I didn't know this. It was originally meant to be shorts for Mad TV.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, they were originally going to do Family Guy shorts for Mad TV, but Mad TV's budget was not enough to support a full animation production in the middle of it. So they canned that.
That explains why there's so many Mad TV people on Family Guy, maybe.
You're probably not wrong about that. Especially Borstein.
Nicole Sullivan, who I just found out is fucking Nicole Muriel Goldman.
Is what?
Muriel, you know Mort Goldman? She's his wife.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That's so funny. it's also crazy because he allegedly pitched the show the same year as King of the Hill. So King of the Hill, Family Guy, get pitched right around the same time to Fox. They pick up King of the Hill, which makes sense. Mike Judge is an established guy with Beavis and Butthead. But then after King of the Hill was seen as a success, they're like, all right, let's do some more. And then they went back to Family Guy. Right. Can we just talk about how in like the early 2000s, that Fox Sunday lineup was sick. Simpsons, Futurama, King of the Hill, Family Guy.
Sick. The greatest lineup of all time.
It's incredible. All of those
shows when they were still like, granted, I think that they're all still making great episodes, like at least the ones that are still around. But like back when, like, it was undeniable that all of these shows are fucking on fire right now.
That is the era of Simpsons that you like a little less, though. That is technically the Scully era. Yeah,
absolutely so. But
I just got through the Scully era. I gotta say, I like it. I think it's good.
Hey, man, all the power to you.
I can't wait to talk about it eventually on the pod. We're going to get there eventually.
I kind of want to, too. I'm not going to lie. So, a couple things about Seth. Number one is he, at least at the time, I don't know if it still stands today, but at the time, 1,000%, he was the youngest showrunner in the history of television.
He's only like 25, right?
He was 24. I think he was my age.
That's nuts. That makes me feel like a real failure.
They called him. They called him and they said, yo, that Family Guy shit, we want to make it. But we want to put it in front of the Super Bowl. So you only got a couple months to do it. He had no team, no writers, no cast members. They were just like, you could do it, but we just need it before the Super Bowl. And he was like, fuck. I think they gave him, I think his name is, I don't want to fucking say his name wrong because he's super fucking important. It's a guy from King of the Hill.
Greg Daniels, probably. No?
No, not Greg Daniels. I think his name is David. Let me type it in. But he was a guy that
he was just a guy who worked on King of the Hill.
Yeah, he was like attached to it, and then they attached him to Family Guy as well, so that Seth wouldn't have to. They gave him something, you know what I mean? So like he wouldn't. Yeah, David Zuckerman.
Oh yeah,
So they attached him to Family Guy as well, and they kind of gave him to Seth so that Seth wasn't kind of going in completely blind, and he like called his called his friend who was ended up being Mike Henry, who ended up playing Cleveland for years and was a big writer on the show. He ended up calling him and just calling all these favors, and Walter Murphy, who does the theme song, and who has done all of Seth MacFarlane's music for everything that he's done ever since. The iconic Family Guy theme song was recorded in Walter Murphy's crib. It was recorded in his house, bit by bit. Like, he would be like, all right, we go record the trumpets. So they just had the trumpets go, and then now stop. And then like, okay, let's do the drum. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he would just do it bit by bit like that. And that's how they put it together. To this day, the instrumental recording that you hear in front of every episode is the exact same one. Walter Murphy wants to replace it so bad, but Seth keeps saying no because he feels like it's a staple of just like where they came from.
I think Seth is right. I really do.
I agree.
It's also a great theme song. I'm looking at Zuckerman. Zuckerman has like a really great career because he ended up developing American Dad as well. He also did the American version of Wilfred. Do you ever see Wilfred?
I've heard of Wilfred.
It's the show where Elijah Wood sees the neighbor's dog as a dude in a dog suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good and pretty dark. And he adapted it from an Australian show of the same name, which is the same premise. And the same guy plays Wilfred in the Australian version. Very different show, though. Like, the Australian one is like a real sitcom. And okay. I would call the American one a dark comedy. But yeah, he wrote on Fresh Prince. He wrote King of the Hill. He did Family Guy, and he developed American Dad. That's like pretty prolific career. So like, it's, I mean, especially all things considered, like we'll talk about this more as we cover this show more. Granted, if you're hearing this, you're probably not going to hear Family Guy season 2 next week. We're going to be covering a lot of season 1s of different shows, so we don't know when we're going to cover season 2 quite yet, but but it's wild that the show kept getting canceled. Like, after season 2 it was nearly canceled, and then they saved it for season 3, and then it was canceled after season 3. And then like it was dead for a couple years before it got brought back because the DVD sales were monumental. It was like the best-selling DVD in Fox history or something.
It was like the best-selling DVD like next to like Chappelle's Show or some crazy shit like that. And I just kind of feel like ever since then they were just kind of like, oh, we're never making that fucking mistake again. And that's just kind of why
It's still
around. And it's so funny that like this kind of similar thing happened to Butch Hartman, who worked with Seth for many years. They worked together on Johnny Bravo and at Hanna-Barbera in general. And Butch Hartman famously created the Fairly Odd Parents, which has always been kind of like that show that's right under SpongeBob on Nickelodeon in terms of popularity. And like, it's so weird because it's like virtually the same thing. Family Guy started with a seven episode first season. The Fairly Odd Parents got a 6 episode first season.
Oh, wow.
And then, like at a certain point in the run, Nickelodeon was like, I don't want this shit no more. And then they stopped, and then like, they were like, oh, fuck, this is still kind of popular. All right, you can make more. And they did that to them like 2 or 3 times until they finally pulled the plug and, they just kind of don't do it anymore. But yeah, it's weird that like they both kind of virtually were going through the same thing.
Yeah, that is wild. It's also funny. Did you know that he has Butch Hartman do some voices in this show?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Did you know that the doctor is named Dr. Hartman?
Yeah, and it's him, right?
It's not. The doctor's voiced by Seth because he sounds exactly like Lois's dad.
Oh, right. God, there are so many. I mean, granted, Seth is truly, I think Seth is one of the most underrated voice actors out there. But that's mostly because he really only voice acts on his shows. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, I feel like people don't value him as high as he should because he's not going out and taking other voice acting
work. So fucking good in his shows.
He's so fucking good in these shows. Yeah, but people like, but you know, people write off these shows. People write off his work.
Absolutely.
And he is like undoubtedly got one of the best set of pipes in the biz. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. And I love that they always like, there's always some good friendly, there's some good friendly back and forth with Futurama and Family Guy. They've always been like, they've always been friendly. And like, there's a really funny joke in the Futurama comic I was just reading. I've been doing this Futurama comic book club. In one of the first issues, they're going to a swap meet and someone sells them this complete series DVD of Family Guy. And this was like, this came out in like 2001, this comic. And it says all 723 episodes.
Oh, that's so fucking funny.
Which is also funny because The Simpsons is now almost at 723 episodes. They're like nearly there, which is
I thought they would have been.
They're like literally a few episodes away from that. But like, yeah, like Family Guy is now at over 400, right? 420 or something like that.
I wonder if they got it in them to stop at 700. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if they got it in them to stop at that exact number.
For that one tiny joke.
Yeah. What if they got that
for that one joke that Futurama comic book fans will know.
That's so fucking funny.
There's the great, like, there's a good bit in the Family Guy movie, which we watched, which is, I guess, is not the first Family Guy thing we covered, where they... where they're at the red carpet and they ask Stewie, is there any plans for Fox to bring back Futurama? And he goes, what publication are you from? I don't remember which one he says, Hollywood Reporter, Entertainment Weekly or something. And Stewie just snaps the guy's neck. But then in the Bender's Big Score movie, the first one, their first thing back.
The fucking calendar, yeah.
Yeah, the wall calendar, which is titled 12 Laughs a Year, which is so funny. And then obviously they, like, Seth did the song for Into the Wild Green Yonder, which is, like, arguably the best part of that movie.
Like, Bender is, like, littered all throughout, Family Guy.
I didn't even know that.
He's in Blue Harvest.
Oh, he's in Blue Harvest, right?
Yeah, he's in this really weird throwaway gag where, like, this is episode where Lois is like cleaning out the entire crib because she gets kind of like addicted to minimalism, and like she's in Stewie's room.
Was this a Marie Kondo episode?
I don't know. I just know that she's reading like some weird self-help book, and she's like, I gotta fucking get rid of all the clutter. And she like goes to Stewie's room and she's like, who put this fucking machine in here? And it's Stewie's like time machine, and she's like dragging it down the steps, and like every time she hits a new step, it like transports them to a different time period, and they go to the future and Bender's there for like a split second.
Oh hell yeah,
really cute. But yeah, they do stuff that all the time.
Was that the same time machine we see here in season one?
No, not that little piece of shit.
Man, that's so funny. And then, like, I also love in Futurama when they have Seth do the voice of Seymour in Fry's dream.
Mm-hmm.
Philip, have you lost weight? good stuff. All right, we should probably start talking about the episodes now. There's so much to talk about. This is like, this is why we should have done these shows sooner, because... We just go on a fucking roll with these things, right? Yeah. Like when we talk about Simpsons or Futurama or Family Guy or King of the Hill, we just can't help but go on these tangents.
Because there's so much to fucking talk about, man. These shows have
been around
forever.
I know, which is why I'm excited to do all these season ones and decide what we're gonna keep going on from there. But it'll be fun. This is gonna be fun. So these first four episodes, they were doing this weird theming with the name where they put the word death, or like somehow related to death. And I remember listening to the commentary back in the day on the DVDs and Seth just being like, we abandoned that very quickly. It was very limiting, especially because these titles have nothing to do.
Yeah. From what anything. I know, I think he was trying to channel like radio plays.
Right.
I think. Or old like Westerns and stuff like that. But like,
yeah. So this first one's written by Seth, obviously. Pilot written by Seth MacFarlane. I love this first cold open joke. The Jemima's Witnesses joke is
pretty funny.
Very funny. It's really good. I wrote down, obviously Family Guy's an interesting show because so much of it is cutaway gags. And so like a lot of the cutaway gags I just wrote, like, this joke is nuts, this joke is funny, this joke is, you know, I just wrote that a lot.
The very first cutaway in the history of Family Guy is that Hitler cutaway.
And I wrote Hitler joke is nuts. That's what I wrote.
That joke tells you exactly what kind of show this is going to be for the next 20 years.
Yeah, right. It's pretty ridiculous. There's also like sprinkled throughout. There's some more typical sitcom jokes too. Like the thermostat joke is so sitcom, where Meg touches the thermostat and like it's funny for Peter popping in going, "Who touched the thermostat?" immediately. And then everyone else from the neighborhood pop in and be like, "Hey, my kid
over here."
It's super funny. But it feels like that's not a joke that, like, you know, I feel like people's perceptions of Family Guy wouldn't let them believe that that's the kind of joke you find in Family Guy, right?
But you know what's so funny about watching these is that, and characterization is a different thing, right? We could talk about that too. But in terms of like the jokes, I didn't see a single joke in this entire season that they wouldn't do today.
Yeah.
They would do all of these today. Like there are
some good ones.
The show is kind of still like this. Like it's like that, like that fucking dumb like dad joke humor. You know what I mean? Where it's just like the weirdest fucking like I don't know. I probably got. Oh yeah, like okay, like when they go to like the, he says I'm gonna buy you guys like a great meal. And then he pulls up to like the fast food.
No, he says the most expensive meal we've ever had.
Yeah, yeah. And he pulls up to that fast food joint. He says, "Let me get 20 chick vaginas."
I think he says 6,000 or something like that. It's like a ridiculous number. It's like it's still going to eat fast food, but he's just doing a larger amount of it to make it the most expensive.
He clearly wants chicken fajitas, but he keeps calling them chicken. Vaginas. And then Brian says, can I have the sausage or some shit? The sausage or some shit like that, which is like it's such a stupid dad joke. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's clearly like we know what the joke's supposed to be, and it's just kind of trying to be dumb. And I talked about that before, about how like I think my favorite Family Guy is when it's just dumb. Like, not when it's like super offensive. It's just when it's just fucking stupid.
Agreed. When it's just fucking stupid. And it's so good when that happens. And there's also like some really funny gags in these cutaways. Like, I love, like, I always remembered the cutaway where Peter's at church doing communion and he goes, "Is that really the blood of Christ? Dude must have been wasted 24/7. But which is a great joke. I always remembered that joke. But the joke that I forgot about that is also fucking hilarious is when the pastor is talking, is like telling the story of Job, which is in the Bible. It's a story about a guy who God like tortures to test his belief. And then they cut to the audience and God is there and he goes, "Oh God, I hate it when he tells this." It's so fucking funny. It's so funny.
It's very funny.
It's such a good joke. Oh man. There's so many good gags in this one. But I also just think this is a pretty good plot for the pilot, because the plot is about Peter not being able to provide for his family. Like it's about Peter making a huge mistake, losing his job, and not being able to provide for his family because of it. And so like really at its core, this first one is about Peter and his family. He is a family guy, as they say. And like I feel like all of these first seven, all of them come back to Peter and his relation to someone in the family or to the family as a whole. And it's always him becoming either bonding with someone or coming to a new realization or understanding with someone in the family and becoming a better, and, you know, arguably being a better person for it. And being, it's like got a really sweet, there's just like a really sweet undertone to all of that.
Because like,
which is nice.
It goes to like, what the initial point of the show was that like it's a show about a guy who takes all of the values that he learns from all the TV that he consumes and tries to apply it in raising his kids and having a relationship with his wife. And that's like, that's super present throughout. Like, he just, he references like the facts of life, like mad often right. in these and like shit like that. Was like, nah, yeah, no, Meg, it's just like this and it's just like that. And like, every cold open starts with them watching TV. All of these episodes have cold opens and it starts with them yep. watching TV.
I like the cold opens.
And that's why the that's why there's the little TV that dots the I in the logo. It's like, it's not there for decoration. It's because it's like essential to the show. Like, it's a part of like what holds it together. Yeah. Like, who exactly
what if,
Peter is.
What if all of the, what if a dad was raised by all of the bad dads on TV?
Exactly. What happens when all of the lessons we're supposed to learn from these shows actually get applied, even the problematic ones?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's just like a cool concept in general. And they I'll be damned if they don't pull it off, because I enjoyed all of these.
I did too, every single one of them. I liked in this one, so like, obviously the premise is that he gets drunk, he's really tired, he falls asleep at work, and his job is to like quality control the toys. And there's this really funny shot where he falls asleep and all of a sudden just immediately
fucking like porcupine.
Poison knives, porcupine, a toaster with forks in it, like all of these things just start coming out. It's such a dumb visual gag. And there's also just like, I like how that all plays out, but there are so many just, I don't know. You're right. It is funniest when it's dumbest. And this one delivery got me pretty good, which was when the news report comes on about the toys that are like hurting people and hurting kids. And the reporter, I can't remember, or Diane says, it's quite a situation we've got here, Tom. And Tom goes, quite a situation we got here, Tom. Indeed, Diane. It's so stupid.
Wait, there's this we're just talking about how fucking dumb it gets. There's this cutaway that kills me. Well, one of the cutaways that kills me is the we talked about it a little earlier, but it's the Philadelphia one where Tom Hanks says, "I have AIDS," and Peter just
Tom Hanks. Like, also the idea that Peter couldn't figure out that it was Tom Hanks is just funny. Like, it's like Tom Hanks, the most recognizable
That's the
man
guy from
ever.
Big. He calls him the guy from Big. He's like, "Oh, Tom Hanks, funny guy, Tom Hanks." So I love that one, but I also love this one where he's in court and he says, "Oh, I didn't have gas for the first time until I was 30. And then he like rips ass and he's like, "What the fuck was that?"
I wrote down good fart joke. What the hell was that? It's really funny. Man, they're like, it is crazy how I feel like the thing that is kind of undervalued about this style, like people can kind of meme the cutaway gag style, but they really are able to jam such a variety of jokes in. By cutaways and by not even cutaways, like things that feel like cutaways but aren't, like when Peter hires his jester and it's just Seinfeld and he pops in, he goes, "What's the deal with New England? It's over 200 years old."
But that's the thing too, is that like if you talk to anybody that like works on Family Guy, they'll always tell you that the cutaways are the hardest part of the show to write and put together, because you have to create an entirely new setup that is not derived from what is already established in the story. And I don't think people will understand that is difficult.
Yeah.
You know
totally.
What I mean? Like, and
a lot for the animators, because you have to animate a whole new location for a tiny
new location,
gag.
New designs, like new incidentals, like always. And yeah. And like, again, some of these cutaways don't feature the main cast. So you have to create entirely new characters.
Right.
And like, if the cutaway has to do with their personality, you have to create an entirely new personality. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
I don't know. I think there is a lot more science to it than
I actually wrote in this first one. In this first episode's notes, I wrote they did a good job implementing cutaways naturally. Like they really do. They really don't feel like they take you out of it. Like they, I don't know. It's they work. They all work really, really genuinely in this.
Yeah, version. I love that. I love that run where they're just they're like talking to Peter about like how he keeps being drunk around the kids, and like it's just like everybody's like everybody remembers something. It's like, oh, remember when we went to get ice cream? And then he like, he's like rum raisin or some shit like that, and he just fucking falls over.
Yeah, he's drunk.
You know what I mean? Like they just kind of, I like that they put it in like this this like list format, and I think it really works. I'm really used to the first 7 minutes of this. This episode, I actually forgot what the entire thing was about.
I remembered the welfare plot, but I forgot that was this first one.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I am so used to the first 7 minutes of this because a majority of that, again, is in like the pilots and stuff like that. There is a test pilot that Seth produced kind of to just show Fox like, oh, this is what Family Guy would be like, which is essentially just literally the first 7 minutes. In a different coat of paint, and it's animated, kind of weird. Because I think Seth did it all on his own. And yeah, like, so I've seen that so many times, and just kind of in studying the show, I'm just so very, very used to the first 7 minutes of this that, like, I completely forgot what follows it. And I think maybe, like, I don't know. I talked about it before about how like some of these characters are unrecognizable. I think the biggest difference might actually be Suey.
Yeah.
And both the characterization.
Like, I like early Stewie though.
I do too. I like both. So I like all Stewies. Yeah. And he's like, they do a joke in that episode I told you about when they go back to the first episode. When the first time they hear Stewie speak, and Brian's like, man, what the fuck? Did you, like, carry a thesaurus around with you? Like, why are you talking like that? Because he just keeps using all these big-ass words.
Yeah.
Like,
they
abandoned that.
There's a lot. I mean, like, even in almost every one of these first seven episodes, they implement some crazy, like, soup, like, almost comic book style science from Stewie's, like, world conquering shit to into, and it's worked into the solution. Like in this episode is literally Stewie's hypno gun finally working, and it hypnotizes the judge into being like, oh, you can go home. Yeah. Which is crazy.
And then a couple episodes later, like, they're about to fucking die, and Stewie has that time machine that restarts the episode.
Yeah, and it restarts the whole episode.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And again, not too far off from what the show became, because there's a lot of that Stewie science shit still. You know what I mean? Like, that's an angle that they never, even though they kind of got bored with him like wanting to kill Lois, he just kind of hates Lois now. Like, he doesn't want to fucking kill her anymore. He's just kind of like, he does whatever he can to just be kind of like sassy to her or something like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think that that's fun too. And I think this is fun as well. But I can understand, like, I don't think I want to see Stewie want to kill Lois for 20 fucking seasons. I would very much so feel like I would get bored of that. And I'm glad that they kind of went, oh, let's just try something else with him. Yeah, I don't know. Family Guy's always been kind of really good at just kind of, they don't really get credit for it, but they've always been kind of good at keeping characterization fresh, keeping the things that happen to these characters fresh. Like, I completely forgot Peter used to work for Mr. Weed, because Peter has had so many jobs. That stink.
And even they rotated him out in the first three seasons already. Like, you, or they were immediately starting to switch them up, or at least four seasons. Like, yeah,
they stick. All of the jobs Peter has stick. Like, he's at the toy factory for a couple of years, and then he doesn't work there anymore. And then there's a string of episodes where he's unemployed. Like, there's like an arc. There's like a string of episodes that. When he's unemployed, and then he becomes a fisherman.
I remember the fisherman thing.
Right. He's a fisherman for a little bit. And then I feel like there's something in between before he starts to work at the brewery. But he's just been working at the brewery ever since. But like still, they'll rotate bosses. Like obviously Angelo was there, was voiced by Carrie Fisher. When they realized, like, you know, when Carrie Fisher passed away, they had to invent some new bosses for him. So they had like this interracial couple. I don't remember who plays the dude, but I know one of the woman was Nacy Nash. And I think they rotated them out. I'm not entirely sure. I can't really remember right now, but yeah, I just think that that's really fucking cool that they take that shit like so seriously and they like move them around and like do different things and put them in different environments.
I really appreciate that they decide to change his jobs out. Doesn't he work? I don't know. That's just, I think that's cool because it doesn't fundamentally change the show, but it gives it a new flavor. You know what right. I mean? And you know, like, I don't know. It'd be hard to imagine them taking Homer out of the power plant, but like
at this point, yeah.
But also they give him so many temporary jobs, then like what does it matter? You know what I mean? He's been everything. Which is so funny to me. But yeah, I really appreciate that about the show. It feels like there's a lot of things like that the show that just gets written off cuz like people are just like, cutaways, like unrelated cutaways. Like, well, the show's a lot more than that. There's a lot more
right,
going on.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I wrote down this joke. Why is Peter's favorite episode of Different Strokes the very special episode about the child molester? Why is that his favorite episode? This is ridiculous. Oh man, I went down a rabbit hole reading up about that episode. I knew about it, but I was like, I guess I don't know about it. So I read up on the whole thing. Sounds pretty crazy. Sounds pretty.
Oh yeah, man. I've seen it. Like I saw it as a kid.
Yeah.
So like when I saw that joke, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah.
Have you ever? This is really tangential, but have you ever seen the smart guy episode that is exactly like that?
No.
That shit is horrifying. It is terrifying because really briefly, TJ and a friend that they give him that is barely around in the show, mind you. They just kind of
his own age.
Yeah, they just needed somebody that's his age. They both play video games online. And they're in like this little chat room. This is when chat rooms were like first started. Cause you know, smart guys like from like 98. And there's this chat room. This guy says that he has like all these like exclusive games. He can sell them to him for the low. So they meet him at this spot. He sells them the games. It's this old white dude. Like not old, but like old enough to where you like, what are you talking to kids for? You know what I mean? Like it's like that got kind of old. And long story less long, they end up at his crib because he invites them over to play games. And he has this game that he invented that's kind of like this like surfing game. You stand on a board and it like looks like you're really surfing. And
oh, I remember. Wait, I do remember this.
I feel like every time I describe it, everybody goes like, oh shit. And then like
I do.
He shows them this book of like all these other kids that came over to play the game.
That shit.
But they're like in their drawers. Cause like he's like, oh, you know, because, you know, you wouldn't surf in your real clothes.
Right.
And, like, he tries to get them to stay, but TJ's like, nah, we got to get the fuck out of here. But she's not, like, his homie's not catching a hint. He's like, nah, she got to come with me. We about to go eat dinner. She said, no, the fuck I don't. He said, no, you got to come with me. We about to go leave. And then they leave. TJ tells his pops. And the guy that plays TJ's dad in that episode does...
I like
some of the strong. He does some of the strongest sitcom acting I've ever seen in my life. The facial expression he makes after he calls the cops is like I've never seen like anybody on television do that face. Everybody who like grew up with like a father figure knows that face that he's making. He's making that face like something could have happened and I wasn't there and I want to kill everybody involved. You feel me? Like he has that face and it's like it's fucking brutal. But yeah, that episode is nuts. I watched it like last year with a homie when I was on my smart guy kick, and I turned to my friend and I said, "If you weren't here, I probably couldn't finish this episode." Like, if I was alone, man, I would have had to turn it off.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
That was, and it also, like, that that episode of Different Strokes, like, popularized the very special episode thing. Like, it was like the first one. And then all of a sudden, all the shows were like, we got to do something. We got to do very special episodes to talk about serious things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird thing for sitcoms to do, but I don't know. It's also hard to remove, like, it's hard to place myself in the context of that time. You know what I mean?
Right.
In terms of television and what TV was doing back then, you know? Yeah. All right. I have one more note about this first one, man. We are like, we've talked so much about, and we're not only one episode deep. We went into this and we're like, this will be a quick breezy 7 episodes. And we are just going, we'll see. Maybe we do split this in half. We'll find out. okay. So I just wrote like the Kool-Aid man joke. It's legendary. It's a great legendary gag. It's really good. I remember when I was younger, that being the literal funniest thing in the world to me. Like, I remember specifically pulling that up. I had a little portable DVD player. I remember on vacation. I remember on vacation once pulling my family and being like, look at this joke. It's the funniest thing you'll ever see. And like showing it to them on this tiny little DVD player. So funny. Great joke. Great joke. Should we move on to the second one? Do you have anything else about this pilot? I think it's a really good pilot.
I do too. I actually have so many notes about this pilot, but we can't.
Shit.
There's no
way
in
hell. Should we keep going? What do you got?
I guess a couple things. Number one, I guess I just erased it from my memory. I completely forgot Mr. Weed was gay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because they do that a lot, and they kind of bring it. It's like in the forefront. It starts here. It starts in this one, which I think is like really interesting. So there's that. Also, the entire family can understand Stewie in this season.
That's what it
Everybody
seems like.
Everybody can. Lois audibly reacts when Stewie says burn in hell. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, and she like, well, like, I feel like part of the early gag was like, are they reacting to the words he's saying, or is he like in their mind throwing a tantrum and she's like, oh,
that's what I think the early implication is.
But the one that gets me is in, I think it's the last one, second to last one of the season. When they're leaving town and she's buckling him in, and she's like, he's like, what are you doing to me? And then she responds directly. And I don't know. I'm like trying to figure out
In the same one we talked about, I think it's called Mind Over Murder. That's the one where Lois is like performing in the,
yes,
she's like doing the singing and shit, right? Stewie says burn in hell, and Lois says, hell is hot. You know what I mean? Like she literally directly
acknowledges the words that he said.
Exactly.
Specifically.
Exactly.
That's so interesting. I don't know. I guess that's what it is in this season.
Yeah, that's just what it is. And that's why I think they keep doing jokes later on where like every time somebody out of universe is talking about Family Guy, they're like, so can they fucking understand a baby or not? Like what's going on here? Right. Like what's that situation? And they do it a lot later on too, because after a while the rules start to get more established. Chris and Brian are the two that actually really understand Stewie. There's this one quick joke where like Stewie tells Peter a secret, and then Chris is like, how the fuck did you tell him that? And Stewie's like, I couldn't keep it on my conscience. I didn't even think he would understand me. And then Peter says, I understand bits and pieces. And I don't know if that's still true, but
right,
he does
is that
say
the
that.
Bit?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the second one.
Yeah.
I never met the dead man. This was actually directed by Michael Dante DiMartino, who would go on to co-create Avatar The Last Airbender. Funny enough.
Shit.
Yeah. He directed two of them. He directed this and the final one of the season. And I think he directed a few over the first couple seasons and then likely directly went to develop Avatar, because Avatar came out in 03, and I think they started developing that stuff a few years prior. So but yeah, this is how he paid the bills before he became one of the most beloved creators in all of animation.
Yeah, man.
So this opening, this is, I love this opening with Stewie playing with his Sesame Street phone or his like his Muppets phone or whatever. And he picks it up and goes, "Put me through to the Pentagon." So funny to me. Yeah, there's just like good little gags like that. And I like I like the diabolical baby. I actually wrote Stewie interrogating broccoli is funny. I miss diabolical baby.
I like that part. He says, damn the broccoli, damn you, and damn the Wright brothers.
Oh, man. I also like some of the dated references in this one. I love once the internet gets knocked out, Chris comes in and goes, "I was in a chat room in America Online." <I'm> like,
America Online.
Like, man, this was definitely written in 1998.
Oh wait, this episode has like one of it's such a funny visual joke. After Peter and Meg get back home, because this is the one where Peter crashes into the satellite dish.
Yeah, exactly.
And like ruins television. And I think it's like before they leave. It's something to that. And then he says, "Oh wait, hold on, Lois. Chips is on." And he's watching Chips. And then the fucking cop comes and he's talking to the woman in the car and he's like stopping her for like some bullshit. He's clearly trying to hit on her. And then they just show like all the shit that he's distracted from behind him. And it's just this big ass truck that drives past him that says pure uncut cocaine. And that shit floored me.
That's great. There are some other like really funny references I like. Like I love when Meg is like, Matt, she's like, all of a sudden she's like, maybe I should tell everyone that it was actually my dad who did it. And then it cuts into like the Wonder Years voiceover where it's like, whoa, suddenly I was public enemy number one.
It's still a dude.
Yeah, it's the same guy. I think it's the same guy. Yeah, like it sounds too. Just like him. that cracked me up though. That was so funny. I also really like the cutaway to like realistic Scooby-Doo where they're just like,
oh,
it looks like they
so
cut out his intestines and choked him with them or something like that.
He's a, that's right, Scoob. It looks like we're dealing with one sick son of a bitch. Yeah. It's so funny.
Which is a funny idea. What if the Scooby gang was like met with like a real murder?
It's like SVU.
murder. It's so funny to me.
Yeah, I love that shit.
Go ahead.
I like when Peter is when he has that TV thing because he's addicted to TV and he can't live without it. And he's walking around and he sees like all the different parts of the neighborhood and he sees there's different channels and he sees these black guys playing basketball and he calls them UPN. That shit is crazy. I was like, oh shit.
I liked when he was doing that and he goes and he sees Quagmire and he goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm going to work." He goes, "Quagmire and his wacky get rich quick schemes."
Yeah. Which is a continuity thing. Quagmire apparently has always been a pilot.
It was literally his first. Yeah, that's the first
second episode. He's dressed to go to work as a pilot.
This episode has the first "whose leg do you have to hump?" Do they do that a lot over the course of the show, or is it just known from this episode?
No, I think it's just this.
That's so funny. That's like such an iconic line that people remember so vividly, and it's in just the second episode of the show.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's really funny. There are some crazy jokes in this. Like when Lois is like trying to like hint at Peter, like there's some more things we can do without TV. Basically like hinting like let's fuck.
Yeah.
but and he goes, "I can think of a few things." And he goes, "Lois, you have a sick mind." And she goes, I was talking about getting intimate. And he goes, "I thought you wanted us to kill the children and harvest their organs for beer money." just an insane joke.
Yeah. I love Peter makes Meg race the guy in the carriage.
Yes.
And then the carriage falls over and it catches on fire and then the fucking horse explodes.
The horse explodes.
And that's what kills it. That's what makes it a real
classic.
Joke.
It's so funny. That's so good. Oh my god. And when the TV goes off the air and the reporters just start saying whatever.
Yeah. And Diane's just like, what's Diane? Diane's like, I just don't like fucking black people.
Just straight racism going on there. And then but I also love the end when they're like, when like it goes back on and he's like about to be, he's like about to spank Diane live on the air.
Because look, right? Like when it goes off, the joke after they say all that like racist shit and everything, the joke is that the guy says, wait, guys, we're still on in Boston.
Yeah.
And then they're like, fuck. Now, in the next gag, the one you're talking about, like, Tom is flirting with Diane and he's like, oh man, fuck my wife, bro. Like she ain't cohog. Like she not gonna see this. But like, y'all are still on in Boston.
You're about
to spank her on Boston, whatever. and then they're like,
YouTube wasn't around back then. They had no worry about it getting out there.
Right. And then the guy goes, we're actually right back in Cohog. And there's this sick ass shot of just Tom with the paddle and like,
yeah,
Diane
with the paddle.
It's such a funny shot.
And they're both like looking back at the camera, like,
it's just one drawing. It's so funny.
It's pretty funny.
I kind of miss Diane.
Is she not in the show anymore?
Oh, you don't know? She fucking died.
No way.
They killed Diane in like season 9, dude.
That's fucked up. What the fuck? Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah, that's okay. Nuts. I guess I gotta get to season 9.
Right.
So this is this first one that they do, the second episode is a like Peter and Meg story more so than anything. It's more about them connecting because he's like, Peter doesn't want to go out and teach her to drive. He doesn't want to do anything. He just wants to watch his fucking TV. He doesn't want to connect with his family. And it's like they give. It's funny to me that how little they give Meg later in the show. But like the second episode is kind of a Meg episode in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah. They do Meg episodes, but they always make fun of the fact that they're doing Meg episodes.
That they're doing a Meg episode, yeah. Right? Well, you got anything else about this one? I like this. There's some funny stuff in this one, but this one didn't like. This one, some of the later ones make me really like, go like give me the like the sweet charmed feeling.
Right,
this one is just like kind of fun silliness. You know,
I agree. The one thing that I actually love about this episode that I always loved about it was the, because you know there's the way the plot evolves is that Peter. After having to live without television for a while, he realizes like how bad television has affected him, and he kind of squares off it, and he doesn't give a fuck about it anymore. When he comes back, he doesn't care. He just wants to live life to the fullest, and he ends up in the hospital. And the way that they get Peter to love television again is so fucking funny. It's just a guy on the street. He's watching this thing in the hospital. It's just a guy on the street, and they're like, "Hey, bro, what would you do for a Klondike bar?" And then it's like, would you hop on one leg? It's like really simple shit. Yeah. And he's like, would you kill a man? He's like, and then you just hit a gunshot and then Peter smiles. And then that's just, he loves TV again. It's so funny.
Oh,
I love that
shit. Oh my God, it's so
funny. I always love that. Yeah. But that's probably all I got for this one.
Yeah, it's a funny episode, but I feel like I got more to say about a lot of these other ones. And that's where we're going to end part one of our
Family Guy
season one conversation. If you want to hear the rest of it right now, you can sign up for the Patreon. We always put it all out at once on the Patreon, including the video version. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till next week for part two. And with that, I want to say thank you to Jake Neutron for our theme song. Thank you to Carrie Feek for our artwork. Thank you to Michael Younes for producing and editing the podcast. Thank you to Toonrific Tariq for being my co-host.
Damn, man.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Yeah. Love you guys so much. But also, f*** you.